Collins. Peter B. Collins news and comment. It's Thursday, September 27th, 2018. Many people will remember this day as the day we attempted to binge watch the contentious, traumatic, and emotional Supreme Court confirmation hearing. The showdown between Christine Blasey Ford, the accuser of candidate Brett Kavanaugh. And it started early this morning. I started watching at 7 a.m. Pacific time. And I will just explain to you that I'm speaking to you just before 2 p.m. Pacific time now. And the questioning of Brett Kavanaugh by Democrats and by the hired gun who was brought in from Arizona to sub for all of the Republican senators, that is underway. And I will report on that aspect of the hearings tomorrow. But the first portion was fascinating, emotional, and we saw both the accuser, Christine Blasey Ford, and the defender, the nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, use a range of emotions to try to carry their personal narratives. And let's start with Dr. Ford. Of course, this was the first time Americans have seen more than that one photograph of her that appears to be on a beach with sunglasses. And she appeared with these huge reading glasses or eyeglasses on and a hairdo that kept dropping in front of her eyes in a way that I found annoying. But she performed quite well. I thought that her story was quite believable. And despite the fact that she can't say exactly when it happened, where it happened, and many other details, I think she was persuasive that she does recall the key elements of what she calls an attempted sexual assault, attempted rape, by Brett Kavanaugh. And she said under questioning that she is 100% certain that it was Kavanaugh who did it. And as I listened to her testimony, I found it touching. I felt the pain of the experience that she had and how that pain returns when she is forced to deal with it in the present tense. And, of course, my bias is against Kavanaugh, and it's easy to say, well, you know, she really nailed it. And many of my friends on Facebook who are partisans and who are opposed to Kavanaugh took some pretty strong positions that, evidence, this is proof. And unfortunately, evidence and proof are what are lacking from the narrative of Christine Blasey Ford. And she tried to offset that with specific recall of the critical issues of Kavanaugh being on top of her, attempting to rip her clothes off, locking the door as she was pushed into this room she didn't know by whom. She referred to Mark Judge being present in the room, and at times she tried to use eye contact to see if he would intervene and stop the assault that she said was in progress at that moment. And so I find her testimony quite compelling. And what's interesting is that Rachel Mitchell, the sex crimes prosecutor imported from Phoenix by the Republicans to do their dirty work, she was measured. She did, in a neutral way, try to chip away at Blasey Ford's lack of recall. She tried to trip her up on questions of fact and the sequence of events. And Blasey Ford admitted what she knew and admitted what she didn't know. And while there are times when it was a little confusing, where Blasey Ford said, well, you know, I got some advice from people on the beach in Delaware. And she didn't name those people, and nobody asked her to. And then a moment later, she was asked if she had discussed it with her parents. She said no. Did you discuss it with anyone while you were in Delaware? And she said no. But how do you get advice on lawyers if you don't discuss the, at least some aspect of the details of the story that she wanted to tell? Now, I don't consider this fatal to her testimony, but I believe it will be seized upon by Republicans who will nitpick at little details. And Rachel Mitchell got her to acknowledge that Dr. Ford has a fear of flying, but she manages it when she wants to go to the South Pacific or on vacation to Delaware or on a trip to Manchester, New Hampshire. And this was discussed because it does appear that Dr. Blasey Ford was reluctant to come to Washington, citing in part her fear of flying. But, you know, she flew to Washington for this hearing, and clearly she is able to manage it. So again, that's a little nitpicky thing where they attempt to chip away at her credibility. And I don't believe there was any major damage inflicted. It's simply the maddening lack of details where she can't say with any specificity where this occurred. And they trotted out maps of the country club where she'd been swimming on the day of the party she claims that she was attacked at. And so it remains to be seen to what extent the work of Rachel Mitchell will have an impact in undermining Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony. Now, before we get to Kavanaugh, I want to note that in the opening statements, Senator Grassley recited, rehashed the Republican version of how Democrats kept secret the information that Blasey Ford had given to them, of course, ignoring that she had asked them to do that, insisted upon it, in fact, and he tried to create the scenario that he's bent over backwards to allow her to be heard, and as soon as she's heard, they're going to ignore what she said. And so it was very awkward to see Grassley open up the hearing. Then he handed it off to the ranking member, Senator Feinstein from California, and she actually did the introduction of Blasey Ford, which Senator Grassley said he was going to get around to after Feinstein's opening statement. Not really clear if that was just a little snag or if it was something that Feinstein seized upon to undermine the credibility of Chairman Grassley. The other thing that's really interesting is that in Feinstein's opening statement, she referred to the other accusers, to the woman from Yale who talked about the drinking game that she played with Brett Kavanaugh that ended up with him exposing herself. And she also referred to Julie Swetnick, the woman who hired Michael Avenatti as her attorney and who issued a sworn statement or a declaration yesterday that she witnessed Brett Kavanaugh at parties where they plied young women with alcohol and drugs and gang raped them. Now, she said, Swetnick said, she herself was gang raped at one of these parties, but that she didn't specifically accuse Kavanaugh or his friend Mark Judge of being her gang rapists. It was called pulling a train. And so I thought that the fact that Feinstein did not reference that was a very interesting intentional omission. Now, I realize that these events are happening very quickly and that for Feinstein, it may require more investigation before she wanted to reference that. But I think it was a missed opportunity to put that on the record. Now, here are a few quotes from Dr. Blasey Ford. Brett's assault on me drastically altered my life. And death threats and reaction from his supporters have rocked me to my core. She said, I've been accused of acting out of partisan political motives. Those who say that do not know me. I am a fiercely independent person. I am no one's pawn. My motivation in coming forward is to provide the facts about how Kavanaugh's actions have damaged my life so that you can take that into serious consideration as you make your decision about how to proceed. And the other thing that is so annoying is that the Republicans intentionally set a very tight time limit. Each senator is allotted 5 minutes. Now, all the Republicans gave up their five-minute chunks to Rachel Mitchell, the hired prosecutor. And the Democrats took their time, their 5 minutes. And, of course, while Blasey Ford was testifying, they made comments about the failure to investigate her claims by the FBI and the general rigged nature of these hearings. And the five-minute format, you know, was even ridiculed by Rachel Mitchell. in some of her intentionally kind commentary to the witness. And this, of course, we know is developing rapport. That's what's used in interrogations, where you try to get the witness on your good side. And Rachel Mitchell, to her credit, was very effective in not appearing to be gunning for Dr. Ford and for being, you know, relatively even-handed rhetorically. So then we turn to Brett Kavanaugh, and he came in pretty tightly wound with a very angry expression on his face. And he launched into, I didn't actually time it, but I think it was about 40 minutes, his opening statement. And he repeatedly denied that he has ever sexually assaulted any woman at any time, including the explicit charges of Dr. Blasey Ford, and he repeated several times in his statement that he understands the passions of the moment, referring to the Me Too movement and the climate in the country. But he said, this is a matter of borking. They've been lying in wait. These charges were held in secret, unleashed and deployed over Dr. Ford's wishes, in violation of her wishes. He called it a series of false and late smears, all nonsense. And these outsized, stout denials were delivered through a guy who was holding back tears. He was clearly extremely emotional at times. I've got a soundbite here, and you'll hear some of that. But I found it fascinating because he was not composed. He was emotional, panicky. He kept guzzling water and running a tongue all around his cheeks, trying to keep from crying, repeatedly sniffling in between comments. And I have to say that putting aside whether or not he's telling the truth, whether he committed perjury today, he demonstrated a demeanor that I find unfit for the top court in our country. And I don't know if there'll be any Democrats who point that out in their measly 5 minutes of questioning. Now, he also took a moment to address the commentary that has surfaced over the last few days about the Georgetown Prep yearbook, his graduating year, and how he has cringed at, he said it was a disaster, that the yearbook was styled after Animal House and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which were movies out in the 1980s. And he explicitly said that he is sorry to a woman named Renata, who was listed by multiple graduates of Georgetown Prep in Kavanaugh's class, saying that he was a Renata alumnus. Now, in Kavanaugh's case, he misspelled it as alumnius, but many people interpreted that as part of this gang rape scene and that she had been one of the victims. Now, he says he was a virgin all the way through high school, and she says that he never sexually assaulted her. And he said that it was merely a matter of affection for this woman that everybody decided to list her in the yearbook. Not everybody, but a whole group of friends from Georgetown Prep. So let's listen to the central denial that Judge Kavanaugh delivered in the emotional manner I described at the Judiciary Committee hearing just about an hour ago.
I categorically and unequivocally deny the allegation against me by Dr. Ford. I never had any sexual or physical encounter of any kind with Dr. Ford. I never attended a gathering like the one Dr. Ford describes in her allegation. I've never sexually assaulted Dr. Ford or anyone. Again, I am not questioning that Dr. Ford may have been sexually assaulted by some person in some place at some time. But I've never done that to her or to anyone. Dr. Ford's allegation stems from a party that she alleges occurred during the summer of 1982, 36 years ago. I was 17 years old between my junior and senior years of high school at Georgetown Prep, a rigorous all-boys Catholic Jesuit high school in Rockville, Maryland. When my friends and I spent time together at parties on weekends, it was usually with friends from nearby Catholic all-girls high schools, Stone Ridge, Holy Child, Visitation, Immaculata, Holy Cross. Dr. Ford did not attend one of those schools. She attended an independent private school named Holton Arms, and she was a year behind me. She and I did not travel in the same social circles. It is possible that we met at some point at some events, although I do not recall that. To repeat, all of the people identified by Dr. Ford as being present at the party have said they do not remember any such party ever happening.
And this is a really important way that he is using the commentary of other people and mischaracterizing or at least recharacterizing it. Because Judge and this guy Smith, who were alleged by Kavanaugh to be at the party, simply say that they don't remember it. And he later converts that to refutation. And, of course, saying, I don't recall, I can't remember, that is the biggest dodge in history. Nixon used it. Alberto Gonzalez, the George W. Bush White House counselor and then attorney general, he used that same dodge all the time. And so this is a very calculated effort to use excess information. And the most laughable part is when Kavanaugh references a calendar that he kept and suggests that he was just too busy. The calendar is proof that he was too busy to have been to a party like this and had the opportunity to meet or sexually attack the accuser, Christine Blasey. And so, you know, you can see that when somebody is really intent on denying something, and, you know, maybe it's not 100% true, right? But the denials are 100%, and this is a huge perjury trap for Brett Kavanaugh. Will the trap be sprung? Will it be proven that he lied? Or will this simply contribute to the pattern that weakens his credibility? And the bottom line here is, are there any Republicans whose votes will change on the confirmation of Kavanaugh as a result of this entire drama scene? And so far, the answer is no. And as long as that is the case, whether the committee vote is taken tomorrow or postponed until next week, whether they actually hear from other accusers and investigate these claims or not, it appears that the die is cast, the train has left the station, and the Republicans will shoot the moon on this. And I want to thank, a listener named Mike, who is very well informed about our courts. And he noted that I kind of fumbled the reference to shooting the moon in the card game Hearts yesterday. And I haven't played in a while. That's why it wasn't fresh in my mind. But if you shoot the moon and fail, you might end up with 25 negative points. If you shoot the moon and succeed, you saddle all of your opponents with 26 negative points. And so the Republicans are shooting the moon. Will the Democrats be able to deny them? At this stage, it still remains unclear. Now, the way they structured this hearing is so unfair. We've already discussed the issues related to the time limits, the substitute of Rachel Mitchell for all of the white male Republican senators. And so Grassley structured this in a way to present the veneer of this woman being heard, but by denying the opportunity to bring in other witnesses, including her therapist, who she told well before Kavanaugh's nomination, Mark Judge, the most important witness who is missing. Well, this can never be considered a fair enterprise, and it will, you know, be foisted off on the American public as that. Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut asked Dr. Ford whether she wanted Mark Judge present for the hearing, and she said, that would be my preference, but I'm not really sure. It's up to me. And as I mentioned, I will have to wait and see if the Democratic questioning of Judge Kavanaugh here in the afternoon session will have any impact, and I will report on that tomorrow. I don't generally tout Jill Abramson. She rose to become the first woman executive editor of the New York Times. Back during the Clarence Thomas hearings, she was a Washington-based reporter, and she covered those hearings. And I give her credit for an op-ed that her old boss, her old employer, the New York Times, published today, headlined, "This hearing is stacked against Christine Blasey Ford." And she correctly predicted that Kavanaugh's approach will be categorical denial. But the most critical part of what she writes, she says, by airbrushing out all this other evidence, including Mark Judge, the testimony of people who Ford told before the nomination of Kavanaugh, she says, by airbrushing out all this other evidence, the Judiciary Committee has left Blasey with an unbearable burden, unschooled in the art of political communication, and that was very clear in her comments, facing questions from not just skeptical senators, but also an experienced sex crimes prosecutor. She must hope that the power of her story, the facts of what happened so long ago, are strong enough to convince the Senate and millions of Americans watching, and she will not have the final say. And that's true. She's gone. Her testimony is over, and you'll see sound bites, excerpts on television news, maybe read that in the paper, see it on your Facebook feed. But when Kavanaugh entered the room and launched into his denials, one of the things I wrote down was, "Thou doth protest too much, like Clarence Thomas." Now, there is a fourth accusation that has surfaced, and it's weaker than all the others. It comes from a completely anonymous source. We only know that it was a letter sent to Senator Cory Gardner of Colorado. And it's a woman who references that a report of an incident. So this is hearsay. This is third hand. Her daughter told her about this scene where the daughter went out for drinks with Brett Kavanaugh and a female friend of his. When they left the bar under the influence of alcohol, they were all shocked when Kavanaugh shoved her friend up against the wall very aggressively and sexually. The woman said that she was wondering what to do about it, but the daughter wanted to remain anonymous, and she felt this story should come out. And the rehearsed reaction to it that came from Kavanaugh and many other Republicans was to use the term Twilight Zone. That is the official talking point of Republicans trying to brush back the anonymous allegation. Now, here comes a Democrat who's trying to clear his name in a similar situation. Keith Ellison, the first Muslim to serve in the House, he is leaving the House from Minnesota, running for Attorney General of that state. And because his former girlfriend, Karen Monahan, has publicly accused him of emotional abuse and said that he once tried to drag her off a bed while shouting at her, well, he wants to clear this up. Quote, "I am taking this step now, calling for the House Ethics Committee to investigate it, because I am innocent and eager to see this entire matter resolved. These allegations have lingered in the public sphere and remain unsubstantiated. I welcome an investigation by the House to allow us to move on." Now, I cannot evaluate these charges against Keith Ellison. As I've told you, my bias is in favor of him. I've interviewed him many times in person. He's one of the few people who told me the truth after Ed Snowden, that James Clapper had lied under oath, committed perjury. So I'm inclined to believe Keith Ellison. But this is a case where the woman should be heard, and it should be aired out and fully investigated. We'll see if that happens. Every day I pause for a second to thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. People like Mitchell Kadish just renewed his annual subscription. Thank you, Mitchell. Steve Wozinski, Judy Holloway, and Ben Brotman each kick in $5 a month, and it looks like Ben is a new sign-up. Thank you, Ben. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Podcast. And I'd like to invite others to join in. We haven't had a wave of new subscriptions lately, and I think you know that a new annual subscriber who gives me a mailing address in the continental U.S. earns the bonus gift of this great rock and roll CD called American University by my buddy John Dist. And it is a theme concept project related to JFK and the assassination. I think you'd find it very interesting, and I'd love to add it to your collection. So come on over today, peterbcollins.com, click menu, then click become a subscriber. You land on the sign-up page, and it's pretty easy to take it from there. Well, Donald Trump is safely back at the White House after stinking up the United Nations for 3 days. We've covered some of his antics. And late yesterday, he gave a news conference that ran for 83 minutes, and it was peppered with a lot of the usual Donald talk about Donald and how everything revolves around him. He talked about how famous he is, and he's been famous so long that it's brought all of these fake allegations of sexual misconduct by Donald Trump. And he said that, yes, it does affect his view of Brett Kavanaugh. He made it clear he believes his nominee considers the allegations part of a smear campaign by Democrats. They're not credible charges. And Trump sided with the man accused of sexual misconduct rather than the women making those claims. And you know why, he said? Because I've had a lot of false charges made against me. People want fame, they want money, they want whatever. So when I see it, I view it differently than somebody sitting home watching television where they say, oh, Judge Kavanaugh did this or that. So this is fascinating insight into this strange man. Because he believes that many of his fans believe his denials about the women who have accused him, including Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal, whose cases are really pretty persuasive. Now, he did allow that he could change his mind after hearing the testimony from Dr. Blasey Ford today, or Balsey Ford, as Rush Limbaugh intentionally mispronounces her name. But Donald was mostly talking about himself, as he usually does. And he did reference that you're guilty until proven innocent if you are a public figure accused in this manner. Oh, and he also tried to explain away the laughter that occurred during his speech at the General Assembly on Tuesday. They weren't laughing at me, they were laughing with me. And in interviews with diplomats who were present in the room, it's clear that that is total bullshit. Now, over at BuzzFeed, a reporter teased out from Trump's news conference the elements that were offensive to women. So, for example, CNN White House correspondent Jim Acosta was called upon, which is rare because, you know, they're a fake news outlet. And when the president acknowledged him, he said, well, if you don't mind, after I'm finished, can you call on one of our female colleagues? They'd like to get your comment on these allegations against Kavanaugh. And Trump said, oh, I wouldn't mind that at all. Then he called on NBC correspondent Hallie Jackson. He interrupted her, and he basically dodged her question. And the way Trump is treating Hallie Jackson, one person tweeted, cutting her off, talking over her, pretending to pull the room on whether she should be allowed to ask another question, is deeply disrespectful and absolutely a continuation of how little the GOP thinks of women. Then he called on CBS News reporter Weijia Zhang, and I'm not familiar with her or her work, but she pressed the president about his attitude toward women who've accused powerful men of sexual assault. How have your personal experiences being accused by more than a dozen women? And at that point, he cut him off. He cut her off. I've been accused, false accusations, he said. And she persisted, if I could just actually ask my question, Mr. Trump, you didn't let me ask my question. And then he told her to please sit down. And that kind of dismissive behavior toward women epitomizes this administration. I've been exposing the Guardian newspaper from Britain for some of its weak reporting lately, and we've got another doozy today. The headline reads, How Novichok Suspects' Identities Were Revealed. And the first of all, they use the term, the plural term. There are two suspects of the Salisbury-Novichok case, but only one of them has been possibly identified through the murky work of the online investigative journalism site, and I put air quotes around that, Bellingcat. Bellingcat has been discredited for its false reporting, affirming the claimed use of chemical weapons in Syria by the Assad government. And it is it's movement media. It is not journalism. But the Guardian, nevertheless, embraces a report from Bellingcat, and they basically used facial recognition software and found a photo that does appear to match one of the Russian suspects. But the photos are 10 or 15 years apart, and they acknowledge that this is not a dead-on match, a confirmed match, and that basically this is just speculation coming from a very jaundiced source. The Intercept reports that a test of facial recognition software by TSA really pissed off the airlines because it kept delaying flights. And so during this test project, the Homeland Security people wrote up a report, and they're offended that the airlines care more about being on time than playing with the facial recognition software. And this says, basically indicates that if the software is rolled out nationwide, we're going to have a lot of flight delays. Here in San Francisco, you may have heard, we have a building called Millennium Tower. It's a luxury condo place. Al Gore owns a unit there and a lot of other people. And it has been tilting to one side. And it's leaning pretty badly, not quite the Tower of Pisa. But we now have a second major building in San Francisco near the same location. It was built on fill, and apparently they failed to drill all the way to bedrock when they built the foundations and placed the structural pilings. Now, a new $2 billion transit center, which is at ground level, is showing serious cracks. And again, these are on properties that are adjacent in the South of Market area of San Francisco. Now, there's this huge convention run by Salesforce. It's called Dreamforce. Thousands of people are in town. They're making this the opportunity to do the launch of this new ugly skyscraper called Salesforce Tower. And it is possible that 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about this huge dildo-style building on the skyline of San Francisco has started to lean badly. That's just a little prediction from your humble host. And finally today, Texas is a place where a young African-American girl, she's now 18, her name is India Landry, and more than 200 times, she abstained from the Pledge of Allegiance by sitting quietly while others stood and took the loyalty oath. Well, she got called in and suspended by a principal, then she sued, and now the crusading right-wing nut Ken Paxton, Attorney General of Texas, is asking a federal judge for permission to argue against this student in order to defend a state law that mandates parental permission for students who sit out the pledge. And my belief is that students can make this decision on their own, and you don't need a federal judge to try to enforce it. In fact, I don't believe it should be enforced. I believe that you can voluntarily opt out of the Pledge of Allegiance, and I've been doing it for about 40 years now. Thanks for listening to my daily news and comment podcast. We give it away free. You're free to share it far and wide, and you can find it on YouTube. I'm Peter B.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails.